Welcome to Going Beyond Medicine with Elaine Groman. Conversations with people who are working to make a difference in our world. Now here's your host for Going Beyond Medicine on Empower Radio, Elaine Groman.
Good afternoon, everyone. This day is very special to me because about a month ago, not even really a month ago, I had the opportunity to meet an amazing woman via phone. And from that, I feel like I've really reconnected with the soul sister, truly. My guest today is Sandy Hart, who is the director of the Charter for Compassion International Women and Girls Sector. She is the president of SARA, which is an acronym for the Spiritual and Religious Alliance for Hope. She serves on the Women's Task Force for the Parliament of the World's Religions. She is a global leadership member of the One Humanity Institute, a City of Hope, and a workshop facilitator for ages 8 to 88. Sandy is just an extraordinary woman who literally brings together like-minded individuals, in particular women, to bring about some healing, bring about balance in our world, which is so desperately in need of healing. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce my guest, Sandy Hart. Thank you so much, Sandy, for being a part of the show today.
Well, thank you, Elaine, and thank you for that lovely introduction. And it's really an honor and a delight to be here.
Well, thank you. So, Sandy, I'm not even sure where to begin. You do so many things. Can you tell me about the Charter for Compassion International Women's and Girls Sector that you are the founding director of?
Sure. And you know what? That's a really great place to start. Let's start at the global ethic of compassion, right?
Yes.
And that just runs through everything I choose to do. And the Charter for Compassion is the host to the Thriving Compassion movement. The Charter for Compassion was really birthed out of an actual document called the Charter for Compassion, which was a result of Karen Armstrong's TED Talk, on which she actually won the very first TED Prize for this compelling argument that compassion is the clear, dynamic, and luminous force for our polarized world. And she took her prize winnings and she convened a global council. She surveyed the world through the internet, asking them, what would you want to see in a Charter for Compassion, if there was such a document, if there was such a living organism that we could all hold up and that we could all, a beacon of light, if you will, a beacon of compassion that could all remind us of this innate imperative that we all have equally in men and women. It's not gender specific and it's biological. It's something that we all can call forth and fix some of our most critical issues in our world that just continue to cycle and cycle and cycle. How can we disrupt that cycle? And so ultimately what ended up happening was that that survey and that council crafted this document, these four impeccable paragraphs that Karn polished. And then some folks in Seattle, after hearing Karen Armstrong and the Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu, and some other notable thought leaders at a conference in Seattle, realized that their town was just bubbling over and they needed to capture this energy in the community. And they decided that the city was the most measurable unit of change. And so they agreed amongst themselves, the stakeholders of the community, to lock arms with the local government and create this first city of compassion. And this was, they identified their interrelated problems. They saw their interrelated solutions through the lens of compassion. They all signed the Charter for Compassion, and they became the first model of what that would look like, a measurable unit of compassion.
Wow.
And that had just sort of was the genesis of this movement, which is completely decentralized. There is a toolbox. You can see how to go about organizing a city of compassion. There is some guidelines, but it is decentralized in that way. And along the way, partners started showing up, schools, small groups, small organizations, healthcare, major healthcare systems, businesses, and individuals wanted to sign the charter. So therein lied the growth of the partners. And now we have over 2,000 partners in 53 countries.
Wow.
Organized into, at the time, a year and a half ago, were 11 sectors. Arts and culture, environment, education, healthcare. I mentioned business, restorative justice, social justice, religion and spirituality. And it just sort of dawned on me one day I was on a volunteer staff call, and it dawned on me, where are the women?
Yes.
And while the women are scattered throughout the charter and all the different sectors, I felt the undeniable urge and the need to bring them together, to circle the wagons, to bring the women into one sector that was all about improving conditions and advancing solutions for women and girls. And by 1:30 that afternoon, I was the director of the women and girls sector.
Wow.
So that is the trajectory. That's the story of where we began and roughly where we are today.
Isn't that amazing, Sandy? When you just say yes, things fall into place so swiftly. Because as you so eloquently just stated, you saw the need of a very large sector that was missing and needed to have its voice. And certainly with what all of the things, for instance, the United Nations, the Global Goals for Sustainable Development, and all of those beautiful things, we need to really work together as a human species to find solutions to the problems we have created.
So, yes, thank you. Thank you for mentioning the Sustainable Development Goals, because
yes.
Speaking of measurable goals, and right now it is an all-hands-on-deck time, and we really do need to face these global issues that impact all of us. We no longer can change the channel, us here in the West, who are privileged to be able to just say, okay, well, that's over there and we're over here. What can we do to alleviate all of the suffering in the world? And one thing, there is something that I failed to mention, and that is actually the definition of compassion that is so sorely misunderstood. And it actually does circle back to the SDGs, the Sustainable Development Goals. And that is the definition, the commonly understood definition, at least at the charter now and in this movement, if you will, is that compassion is the willingness to identify the suffering of another and the desire and the courage to alleviate that suffering.
Mm.
It's an action word. It's a verb. It's not just sympathy and empathy and kindness.
That's
which
right.
is the most misunderstood definition, right?
That's right.
It really, it's not soft or comfortable either. It is painstaking when done right. It asks us to stretch beyond the edges of our comfort and put another person in place of our own comfort and dethrone ourselves from whatever privilege we have and help someone a little less fortunate.
Yes.
Or greatly more less fortunate.
Yes.
And with the goals, there's no excuse actually to say we don't know what to do, because the Sustainable Development Goals not only clearly, the United Nations not only did a beautiful job on their website, which I believe is SDG.org, but they outline the goals, what the goals are, and with target points. And there's even, I love this, Elaine, there's, I think it's called the Lazy Person's Guide to the SDGs, like things we can all practically do and take into our day.
Well, that, you know, that isn't that beautiful? Because even those people that, as you said, the lazy person, that doesn't necessarily mean to be demeaning in any way, but some people that simply just don't know what to do. So many people feel so overwhelmed by what they see, and they forget that they can do a lot just by standing, as you said beautifully, your beautiful description of compassion is an action word. And and to stand with someone in their challenge, and to help them to see their challenge differently so that they can get out of that challenge and then grow from that and then turn around and look at others that have been in that situation and help them out. It's a continuous cycle, isn't it?
It really, really is. And it doesn't have to be. We can disrupt that. And
yes.
I was on one of the activities, one of the programs that the Charter for Compassion Women and Girls Sector does is a webinar series. We try not to be too programmatic because we really are host to a network of partners. So we want to elevate our partners, but we can also weave together our partners in a really creative way. And one of the ways we do that is by elevating them on a webinar series. And we recently had a webinar call with Bob Zuber of a wonderful United Nations organization called the Global Action to Prevent War and Armed Conflict. And on that call, Bob, who works, Dr. Robert Zuber, actually, he works at the United Nations. And we were talking about the SDGs. And he said this quote, "Good policy requires better people. Policy is a personal commitment, not just an institutionalized one." It's not just about our agency, it's about us.
Isn't that true?
It really, yeah. And isn't that where we are at right now? We are no longer, I love the Mother's Day proclamation, we are no longer waiting for unqualified institutions to make important decisions. I think that's what said when writing the Mother's Day proclamation.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Sandy, because yesterday I was having a conversation and I was talking with somebody about what it means to be a chief. And most people don't realize, and they use the term chief, like I'm the chief executive officer, I'm the chief this, chief that. But what they don't really realize is the real meaning of chief is a pledge of integrity. To be a chief means a pledge of integrity. So as you're speaking about our leaders need to be different kinds of people, they need to make that pledge. And isn't that what we really need? We need to have transparency in terms of our leadership. Are you really doing this for the goal that we're setting forth, or are you doing this for your own, you know, ego or whatever? And we need to weed through that so that we can stop putting in positions of authority people that really have no understanding of what true authority means.
Yes, that's a very good point. And you know, I want to boil everything down to where can we go to disrupt the core characteristic behavior at that pattern, at the root of that pattern. And, you know, and I'm sure you've heard this before, that there are two motivations in life, in the world. We're either motivated by love or we're motivated by fear.
It's true.
And what can we do to dismantle that fear? And that is, that I think boils down to personal awareness, and also self-advocacy too. And it was actually on that call with Dr. Robert Zuber, that it dawned on me that perhaps we need an 18th goal.
Yes.
SDG 18 now exists on self-awareness and personal agency. That's the 18th goal in order to accomplish all the other 17 goals. And this is an unofficial goal, so I don't mean to ruffle any feathers at the United Nations or suggest that there's actually 18 goals. There are 17 goals that are very thoughtfully and carefully planned out. But the 18th is this unofficial goal, really just an awareness campaign to remind us that we have to start with ourselves. Peace begins with us.
Excellent.
And we have to acknowledge our fear. And the return on investment is so much greater when we are better chiefs and not, you know, ego-driven than the unhealthy side of ego.
Yes, and many people misunderstand what their ego is. Their ego is something that is meant to keep their body alive only. But we use ego and we defame ego all the time. Our ego, since we're spirit beings, we're spirit in a physical body, and the vast majority of us is driven by spirit, we have to remember that we're in a body, so we have to care for the body. So the ego is designed to say, oh, it's a little chilly out, put warmer clothes on, or oh, you're tired, take a nap, or you're hungry, eat some food. That was the guiding force of the ego, not beyond that. But we have, when we don't engage the self that we are, and we don't understand that we're a spirit in a body, then it's so easy to be driven by the ego. And I think that you're so beautifully stated that that SDG 18. It's so amazing because when I saw the very first time I saw you on a video, I wrote down, and I think I even wrote it in an email to you, mm-hmm. you know, we need to have self-awareness. You know, if you don't, you're so accurate. That should be number one. If we don't know who we are, then we will have no idea how to navigate all of the other things we're trying to do.
And that is so true. And I'd like you to actually speak a little bit, if you don't mind, about sacred geometry and the role of the divine masculine and the divine feminine and the balance. You mentioned early on balance. And really, in order for us to understand ourselves, we have to understand the balance of the divine masculine and the divine feminine. And I'm really curious to know how sacred geometry, better understanding sacred geometry can help.
Well, thank you for asking that, yeah. Because it is, most people immediately, as soon as they hear this term sacred, they think of religion, and that is not correct. Sacred geometry was, the phrase was coined many, many, many hundreds of years ago. And the concept is, when great minds were studying the natural world, they saw that everything was geometrically patterned in terms of the way the stars moved in the sky, in the elliptical movement, in the way that water swirled, and the way that plants unfurled. And they realized that they were watching and observing this replication of geometric patterning. So the term sacred geometry means the study of creation itself, how creation created everything. If you think to the very beginning of the life of any human, as two cells come together, there's an immediate atomic reaction, literally an atomic explosion of spheres that are replicating and replicating themselves. Well, a sphere is geometry. And as we look at these things, we begin to understand that everything in our world is connected. And every part of our body is connected. Our thoughts are connected to our physiology. We are connected to the natural world. The natural world is providing us with all that we need. But to get back to your original question, what about male and female? What we need to understand and really look at with a different dynamic is to understand that human beings are a species on this planet. Like every other species on this planet, we have been given the gift of this earth as being our home. And any species that loses its ability to maintain its genetic structure, if you could think of a beautiful sphere that was almost like, the thought that comes to mind is like the Epcot Center, this beautiful sphere that is all these triangles together. If you start to break down those connections, it will implode upon itself. So like many other species on this planet that have become extinct because they were not able to hold that pattern any longer, we are arrogant enough to think we are not part of that. And we are not only destroying ourselves because of ignorance, but we are destroying the very environment that sustains our life. So when we begin to see that we are meant to partner, we are one, male and females make up the human race. There is no other species. There's no other part but the male and the female component, just like all other living things. They have to be able to work together in unison or that species will fail. So it's a very large, huge, complex study. And it was so important. There was a time that I think his name was Emperor Thelodius in 399 actually forbid the study of sacred geometry because what it did was, and under penalty of death, because what it did was helped people understand their autonomy. That we are immediately connected to the living world and we do not need intermediaries. And that
is so true.
That is so true. But what we need to do, and our ignorance, and I use that term very cautiously because there's two meanings to ignorance. There is willfully ignoring And then they're simply not being aware of the information. So I would prefer to use the concept of not being aware of the information. If that information is cloaked or hidden from you, you can't fault someone for not knowing what they don't know. But if there's willful ignoring, then that has a completely different thought behind it. That has a thought of divide and conquer. That has a thought of control. And what we need to know is we are not in control. We don't beat our own heart. We don't create the air that we breathe. We don't know how this incredible complexity of how is it that we can eat a beautiful leaf of spinach and somehow that becomes a cell within our body. The complexity is beyond our understanding, but the simplicity of it is within our reach, which means that we cannot destroy that which holds us together or we'll be in peril. And we already are. So that was a long explanation, but it is a very vast subject. And all of science is based on sacred geometry. All you have to do is look at a diagram of a molecule.
All geometry. It was stunning. It's stunning when you remember these things. We come back into membership with this understanding, mm-hmm. whether we're hearing it from the first time or it's just embedded in our cellular memory, it's a sudden remembering. It's like, aha, that makes such elegant sense.
It does. And as you said, Sandy, and again, I need to reintroduce you. My guest is Sandy Hart, who is the director of the Charter for Compassion International Women's and Girls Sector. And please go to her website, which is so beautiful. And I love the photo just right on your webpage, the homepage that shows you just speaking. You can't see the people, but you can see the passion in your countenance of how you're just there. And please go to her website, www.sandy, which is spelled SandeHart.com. And all of the many things that she's involved in. And really, as a strong woman that is not afraid to feel and be aware of the challenges that we have, because if we don't look at it, we can't change anything. And Sandy, I'm sure that you would agree with me that one of the challenges that we have, and myself as a healer, what I talk with people about is to learn to reframe what has happened to them in the past so they don't hold anger about it. Mm-hmm. So that we know that when something is no longer workable, then you just have to let it go. Mm-hmm. But you can let it go with love so that mm-hmm. you can have a different choice that you can make.
That is so much easier said than done.
Yes.
That is so hard. It is
until you get into the habit of it.
Yes, it is a habit. Exactly. And I first of all, I want to thank you for that generous compliment. You know, my mother takes great pride in saying that she raised four very strong women.
She did.
Yet I don't feel strong. You know, I feel honored. I feel blessed. I don't feel always that I have much of a choice in the matter of what I do. I constantly intimidating, maybe courageous sometimes. Maybe I'll accept courageous. But yes, of course, a lot of this work is not for the faint of heart, but I want everyone to know that everyone has is required to step into their unique, authentic power right now. I don't want any women or men sitting at home or on wherever they're hearing this or anywhere in the world thinking that they're waiting for strong people to show up mm-hmm. to fix this issue. That was the intention of SDG 18. It's all about us, and we've got to show up with our unique ingredient to the recipe. It could be the activating yeast that we're looking for.
Well, I'm gonna make one slight change in what you just said, because I believe that you are a strong woman, and I think that what we equate is force with strength,
mm-hmm.
and true strength, being a warrior or a warrioress. The greatest warrior never has to go to battle. they stand there and say, this will happen no more. And they stand there as a testament to saying, this cannot go further. And that takes strength, and that takes a beautiful power that is not the same as force. That is a knowing.
So true.
A
so
deep
true.
Knowing.
And that, thank you. Thank you for that. Because, and by the way, that's another thing we need in our lives, are women like Elaine to set us straight with that memory, mm-hmm. with that remembering.
Well, that's that, why we're going to work together, sweet pea. I just
all
know
sisters
it.
Sisters on deck. Yeah. Well, no doubt about that. We are doing it. It's yeah. already destined.
Yeah.
So exactly what the Me Too movement and what the feminine, divine feminine rising that's happening in our world now, there's a redefined energy
right.
of what it means to be a strong woman.
Right.
It's not like the feminist movement of the 70s and 80s where it was more gender-based, where it meant women being more masculine in their energy.
Right.
And quite unfortunately, what that did was we were just replacing the energy. We were just fighting energy with it, the same energy that we were fighting.
That's
which
right.
We all know is insanity.
That's right.
So, and we also didn't allow our counterpart men to embrace the feminine qualities.
That's
that.
Right.
It was
and to have their strength come forward. Sandy, we got to
right.
take a real quick break. We'll be right back. My guest is Sandy Hart, who is the director of the Charter for Compassion International for Women and Girls. And we're going to talk about all of the things that she's got going and more. Please stay with us. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
The Empower Meditation Channel. Nonstop meditation music 24 hours a day in the new Empower Radio app. Music to empower your meditation, help you relax, sleep, or provide a calm background while you work. The Empower Meditation Channel is interruption-free. Listen now with the Empower Radio app, free in the App Store, or listen online at empower.fm. Soothe your soul. Calm your mind. The Empower Meditation Channel.
This is why you work so hard to pay the mortgage. Because home is more than four walls and a roof. It's that porch swing on a summer night. It's pajamas with feet and everybody over for Sunday dinner. And that old stuffed chair in the living room you just can't get rid of. This is why you work a second job. This is why you learn to fix things yourself so you can save on repairs. Because home is your place, your memories, your family sleeping in their own beds at night. And that is why we want to help. We are Making Home Affordable, a free government resource that can make paying the mortgage easier. And now even more options are available. Call 888-995-HOPE today. That's 888-995-HOPE. Or visit makinghomeaffordable.gov.
Good night, Mama.
This is why. Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Hey, America. We need to have a little talk. I don't know if you've noticed, but we got a lot of food in this country. A lot of peaches, a lot of corn, a lot of apples, a lot of everything. We've got so much food that we can't even eat it all. So if we got all this extra food, how are 17 million kids in America struggling with hunger? I just don't get it. That's why the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks gathers surplus food and gets it to the hungry kids who need it. They can get you food even if you live in Idaho or Alaska or somewhere crazy like that. This isn't complicated. We got extra food and we got hungry kids. Feeding America's done the math. Now it's your turn. Support Feeding America in your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. I know you got internet on your phone, so what are you waiting for? We can't do it without your help. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
This is you over 30 years ago.
Are we there yet? Are we there yet?
And this is your mom now.
Are we there yet? Are we there yet?
Roles change without us noticing. That's why AARP gives you the information to provide even better care for your loved one. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Now back to Elaine Groman and Going Beyond Medicine on Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Good afternoon. This is Elaine Groman returning with my guest, Sandy Hart, who is the director of the Charter for Compassion International Women and Girls. Again, thank you for being on the show today, Sandy.
Oh, thank you, Elaine.
So can you tell us also about some of the other organizations that you're a part of? Because you just seem like you're all over the globe. Thank you very much for being willing to have so many frequent flyer miles. But you're the president of SARA, which is the Spiritual and Religious Alliance for Hope. Can you tell us about that, please?
Oh, sure. My delight. My joy, actually. The morning of 9/11, like so much of the world, I woke up to a new understanding of the world. Mm-hmm. And before I got out from underneath the covers, I heard Gather the Women. And I didn't know who I was hearing this from. I was the director of sales and marketing for a major home builder. I wasn't necessarily spiritually inclined. My kids were in Jewish religious school, and I was learning more about my tradition that way. But other than that, I really had no spiritual inclination that I was aware of anyway. But I heard Gather the Women, and I said, yes. Of course, I didn't know where I was supposed to find the women or what I was supposed to do with them once I got them, but I trusted, and I said, yes. And by the way, before my feet hit the floor that morning, I was completely rewired. The DNA in me completely restructured, it felt like. And it was very hard for me to function in the corporate world, but I did for a while. But along the way, I got invited into some living room dialogues by our community here in Orange County, the Orange County Human Relations Commission. And in these dialogues were people, men and women, from in my particular living room dialogue into three different faith traditions, Jewish, Christian, and Muslim. And I found the women, and I pulled them aside, and I said, ladies, I'd like to have my own conversation, and let's gather. And so I opened my front door and got out of the way. Mm. And SARA emerged. You know, we came up with the name SARA as the mother of all nations. Mm. Of course, we've expanded it beyond the Abrahamic faith traditions and expanded to also religion and non-religion, believers and non-believers, and women basically conforming to their highest and their deepest values. And that was 15 years ago.
Wow.
We meet in circle in one's homes. Women decide to do this in their own communities. We have some structure for them, but we want it to be their own, and it does take off wherever they go. And some women call it whatever they want. It doesn't have to be SARA. But SARA, you can join our network. We have, a pretty significant number of women who are part of our email stream, if you will, but there's no subscription or anything. It's just really the concept of women coming together, women needing one another. It's, it's in that biological imperative that when times are difficult, women gather. Women, the oxytocin rises in us, right? It's that physiological impulse to tend and befriend, right?
Yes.
And there's an impulse in the male gender, mm-hmm. of, testosterone rising, but this happens to be the case in the female body.
Yes, and in many indigenous cultures, long before, unfortunately, there was the greatest genocide on the North American continent of mm-hmm. Native Americans, there was a deep love, appreciation, and honor of the female human being, because they knew that only a female body could bring life forth with the assistance of a male, of course, but that this body was literally, they considered a woman who was pregnant and or had just given birth the holiest person in the tribe, because they had the ability to hold more than one spirit in their body at a time. And that is a temple. So that means that there was a great respect for life and the cycles of life. And that's what's so needed in our world, wouldn't you say?
Well, yes. And, that condition, that culture still exists in the indigenous community.
It certainly does. But we don't know about it.
Yeah, that's right. And I know you and I both love and honor Grandmother Flor de Mayo.
Mm-hmm.
who is one of the founding 13 Indigenous grandmothers, and she's of Mayan descent. And we had hosted her on our Charter for Compassion Women and Girls launch call. And that's how I came to know her. And one evening I got a call from grandmother who told me that she was in Central America. She actually lives in Santa Fe, but she happened to have been in Central America visiting, and she was walking through the forest, and she got her mandate that it was time to bring awareness to the fact the divine feminine is rising.
Yes.
And according to the teachings of the Mayan calendar, that is called Ish, mm-hmm. the day of divine feminine rising, which comes around every 20 days, actually, on the Mayan calendar, is symbolized by the lion, by the cougar.
Yes.
Or the jaguar.
The jaguar.
The jaguar. Mm-hmm. And the jaguar is known for her agility and her cunningness and her nurturingness and her ability to hold life and protect life, know when to pounce, know when to sit back and rest. And the spots on the jaguar represent the heavenly body.
Yes.
So it's the connection of the earth and our celestial beings.
That's right.
And the connection.
Mm-hmm. And also in the understanding of medicine, and when someone has their medicine, the jaguar also represents the keeper of knowledge.
Mm.
So the jaguar, you'll find in many temples that at the doors of a temple are jaguars.
Oh, isn't that fascinating? Mm-hmm. I did not know that.
Yes. So they're
right.
considered the keepers of sacred knowledge. And that sacred knowledge is our origins of who we actually are. That's what we've forgotten.
That's
sacred
right.
knowledge is the sacredness of being human. So in our context, that is our perception. That is what we need to understand. Our sacred duty, our sacred gift is to be the stewards of this beautiful planet. Because it took tens of millions of years for the conditions to be right for us to be here. And we forget that. That it took tens of millions of years for there to be enough water so that there could be tens of millions of years for there to be enough plants and then ultimately animals and then finally us. So there was so much preparation for humans to inhabit this planet. And that's what we need to begin to comprehend.
Mm-hmm.
This is our gift. And all of this has been presented to us. And we're like spoiled children just walking through and damaging the gifts.
That's right. That's right. And grandmother's mandate was to get this message out that not only that we are entering into this era of Ish, mm-hmm. and Ish is spelled I-X, mm-hmm. Ish, and Ish is the divine feminine rising. And I've heard from other Indigenous elders and other places in the world, this has all been prophesized.
Yes,
that it's happening. We are evolving. We are evolving into a better knowing of that which you just spoke so eloquently about. The question is, how are we going to embrace it, and how hard are we going to resist it when things aren't working anymore and things die out, like species die out? Do we evolve or do we die? And mm-hmm. I think that we're at that place. It's
yes.
pretty simple, I think.
It is. And as you spoke earlier, Sandy, and again, my guest is Sandy Hart, and she, one of the many things she does is she's the director of the Charter for Compassion International for Women and Girls, and she's speaking to us from Orange County, California this morning. So I appreciate that very much. But what we have to remember is also to bring lovingly to bring the men forward, because their mm-hmm. whole lives have been so maligned when they've been taught to dismiss the depth of spiritual integrity within them and to live other roles that maybe are so against everything that they innately know. And so we have to not blame, but to say, I'm sorry that we put this on you. That you have to be strong, that you have to have all the answers, that you have to be this and you have to be that. And we have put so many roles on one another that really should be more malleable than a definition. So it's really rethinking everything when we're bringing the divine feminine back. It's rethinking everything.
It really, and it really is, it's remembering.
Yes.
It's and understanding it, being mm-hmm. personally aware of it. The masculinity, which is required in, or I should say divine masculine, which is required in both the in both genders.
Yes.
That masculinity, the traits are protectiveness, competitiveness, organizing, mm-hmm. Structure, and the deference of truth.
Right.
These are strong, powerful, and also critical characteristics that women also have.
That's right.
Right. So it's really just better understanding and not being, like we talked about earlier, not being in fear of that.
That's right.
And what does it mean when we can turn our swords into plowshares,
where
we can actually rethink our actions and reimagine a different future.
Sandy, one of the things I want to ask you, and thank you for sharing that because it's so beautifully, we do need to reimagine. And to know that our imagination is incredibly powerful. Without our imagination, we as humans couldn't bring anything to fruition. So our imagination and that foolish notion of being right-brained as if it's flighty is the power force behind any new concept, whether it's a physical thing or a whole way of leadership that comes from being able to dream into being. Just like you had the experience on 9/11 of listening to this beautiful voice from the ethers that's there. If you were only using your left brain, you would have said, oh, that's silly. And you would have dismissed it.
Or, well, who am I to do that?
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Yes. But I want to ask you about this amazing, the global leadership. You're a global leadership member of the One Humanity Institute.
Mm-hmm.
And as I brought this website up, I came to tears. And could you please explain what this is about and how you're involved?
Well, talk about transformation.
Yes.
Talk about reimagining the future. The One Humanity Institute is the vision of the One Humanity Institute, which belongs to and has been shared by Nina Meyerhoff, who is this extraordinary being that's had a long history of educating young people. She's worked at the United Nations for decades. And as it happens, her grandmother perished at Auschwitz the same day she was born.
Oh,
there's this something inside of Nina that has been calling her to do something about Auschwitz. And this, if we were to go to the darkest place in humanity, the darkest pressure point known to man and common era of what man's capability for evil is, and transform it there. Imagine what we could do it everywhere.
Yes.
And so the vision of this One Humanity Institute is to transform 11 Nazi barracks that currently are a campus of their own adjacent to the Auschwitz death camp, otherwise known as the Auschwitz Museum. Mm-hmm. On the opposite side of the parking lot from where the buses come in is this campus. And we want to transform these buildings into a place for higher education, formal and non-formal education, for peace leadership. There will also be a library, a peace garden, a place to come and reflect, a museum of the future. In other words, let's reimagine the future together. What happens when you come through here and we've already experienced the dark heaviness and that which we will never forget? Yet here you can step over the threshold into a place where, okay, we now have a solemn responsibility to not return home the same that we came here.
Yes.
We need to return home with our personal responsibility to do something about it. Our one little action that we could take into our community, wherever we return home to. And there will be NGOs and model with their models of things that they're doing, models you can emulate or replicate or be inspired by and take home. So that is our ambitious project, which we've we're moving right along on, and with the support of the community, we know it's can be a landmine conversation, but if we are going to affect transformational change, we must go right to the heart of the problem, and that heart of the problem lies in all of our lives. Right? We tend to look over the really difficult conversations.
That's right.
So, but on a scalable size, we couldn't imagine a more important place to do this work than Auschwitz.
Yes. And so if for my listeners, if you want to go to onehumanity.institute, you'll see this incredibly beautiful vision that they have, which is so important. And this is taking place in September. Is that right?
Well, you know, we're still in negotiations on the, you know, to get permission from the government. Currently, the barracks are owned by the military, which very few people know. But now, hopefully, a lot more people know. It's just not common knowledge for some reason that the military is, you know, inhabiting these buildings. And we want to change that. And so what's happening in September is a convening at the United Nations. What's happening in June is an ongoing festival called the Life Festival, which is quite remarkable. And this was put on by the city of Auschwitz, which is where Auschwitz is located. And this is where major performers come for this 3-day festival. And the intention is to remind the young people that they have the power to transform the future. So the Life Festival folks are completely in alignment with our vision and are working with us on this. And that's happening in June. So there's a runway of things that are happening, but we're hoping that our goal is by the end of 2018 that we will be able to start construction. But it's a very delicate process.
Sure.
And, you know, we're dealing with a very delicate conversation. So it can be very political. So
yes.
We have to be very careful.
Yes. As I'm looking at the website there, I got a little confused because it says International Day of Peace, but it says 2017. So obviously that
needs to be fixed.
it's September of 2017, it says. So yeah, they definitely want to change that. Has the wrong dates. So
thank you. Yeah. That was an event that happened there.
Okay.
There was an actual event that happened there. So thank you for pointing that out.
Need to put more of the newer things that are going to be coming up right then and there. So thank you for that. And there's so many amazing people like Dr. Jane Goodall, Chris Van Cleese, Scarlett Rivera, all these many people that are working to open that up. So tell us what's happening. If you could, again, my guest is Sandy Hart, who is the director of the Charter for Compassion International Women's and Girls Sector. She is the president of SARA, which is an acronym for the Spiritual and Religious Alliance for Hope. She serves on the Women's Task Force for the Parliament of the World's Religions, and she is a global leadership member of the One Humanity Institute, a City of Hope. Can you tell us about the Parliament of the World's Religions? What is that?
Oh, my goodness. Thank you. The Parliament of the World's Religions is the oldest and largest convening of interfaith people from all around the world. Over 130 years ago, perhaps, the very first parliament was held in Chicago at the World's Fair, where Swami Vivekananda came, and it was the first time anybody had seen anybody like him before, and addressed the crowd. And at that point, he really sparked something new in terms of the imagination of the expansive nature of our world, because again, no one had ever seen or heard of anybody like him before in 1889. I beg your pardon. Don't make me do the math now, but that's how long ago the very first parliament was. And then 100 years later was the next Parliament of the World's Religions. And every 4 years, there has been a parliament somewhere in the world. And a parliament has a convening of somewhere around 12,000 people come from over 80 countries, convene for a week amongst about 500 workshops, plenaries, sessions with world leaders, world religious leaders, presidents and heads of state, thought leaders, as well as grassroots community builders, clergy, people working on social justice issues. It's no longer just about interfaith, but it's how are we going to heal our world's problems through the lens of interfaith? Mm-hmm. And what is the role of the interfaith community in addressing our world's issues? It's really an incredible place to go to just meet people who are doing extraordinary work in the world, religion or non, spirituality or non. And it's a transformational place. Imagine walking the halls with people that are different, wearing different regalia and different accents and different languages and different colors and different textures. I mean, it's like heaven on earth.
Yes.
And it really is transformational. Anyone can submit an application to do a workshop or a plenary or a session of some sort. It's really amazing. This will be my third parliament. Unlike all the other parliaments, I said they're 4 years apart. This year is 3 years later after the last parliament. And it's going to be held in Toronto, November 1st through the 7th. And you can get to the website by going to www.parliamentofreligions.org and see the 2018 Parliament. Submit an application. Come and be. There's a large presence of Indigenous wisdom. And last Parliament, in Salt Lake City, which is where it was, and before that it was in Melbourne, and before that Barcelona and Cape Town, and again in Chicago. But in Salt Lake City was the first women's assembly.
Beautiful.
And the women's assembly was earth-shaking. And there was a primordial holler coming out of women from their womb in that room. You couldn't deny the energy that was swirling throughout that room. And it was because the Shiro drummers were there and women like Marianne Williamson and Reverend Joan Brown Campbell and Bishop Barbara King and Malika Chopra and Valerie Carr and just one power woman after another speaking truth to power, that it is time for women to rise and to stay woke.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happened at that Parliament in that room that day was the birth of the Charter Women and Girls Sector, I might add. I'll just plug that real quick.
And you just raised your hand and said you'd be the global leader member? Or is that, you're not in charge of that though, are you?
No. So because of my work with the Charter, the Parliament and the Women's Task Force invited me into their leadership. And I'm also, my sacred task at the Women's Task Force is to bring in the girls, the conversation of girls, which in my opinion is, if you were to go anywhere, we've got to go first to the girls and then to the boys. And if we don't elevate our girls and empower our girls and entrust in them the knowledge that they are powerful beyond measure in an unprecedented unified way, when they come together and do incredible things. And then the boys, to honor this, to, like you mentioned earlier, what the Indigenous culture gives their youth and honors their girls and their women. And the ceremony alone around when the girl first gets her menstrual cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And the beauty, the whole community gathers.
Yes.
Everybody
yes.
gathers around the girl. And my question is, well, where are the boys? They're right there.
Right, they're in support of the girls.
They're there because they're honoring the girls, and they in themselves then become stronger and more powerful.
That's right.
And empowered.
That's right.
And in partnership.
That's
in partnership.
Right.
We need balance.
That's right. Well, I cannot express to you how grateful I am that you are willing to get up at the crack of dawn this morning in Orange County, California, to speak with us today. Again, my guest has been Sandy Hart, and she is truly a woman of the world, truly a woman that, even though she might, you know, not agree with this, I'm going to say she's one of very strong. And that strength is in just being willing to say, this is what we need. And it doesn't need to be screamed. It just needs to be stated with an open and loving heart so that there is no blame. There is simply solutions that are going to try to be brought together with people from all different walks of life who can only be the ones that are sourcing what's happening in their individual areas, because we can't know everything. But when we come together, we can listen to everything. And that's what's so important. So, Sandy, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for you being here, for what you're doing for women and girls across the globe, and just for showing up in my life. Thank you so much.
Oh, Elaine, and thank you for what you do and what you bring to so many people with your workshops, with your website, with this program. It's so critical. You are certainly filling an important need and bringing something so unique and powerful. Thank you so much
for this opportunity
to be with you.
Thank you. And again, this has been Sandy Hart, who is the director of the Charter for Compassion International Women and Girls Sector. Please take a look at that beautiful website and send this when this comes. Once it airs, it's saved as a podcast. Send it to everybody you know in the world. Everyone needs to know this, that we're working together to help to bring a healthy change to our world. This is Elaine Grohman for Going Beyond Medicine on Empower Radio. We have the power to make the change, starting within us. You can do it. I can do it. Let's do it together.